Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
I'm Jesse Thorne. It's Bullseye. I am really excited to welcome Maria Bamford back on Bullseye, my favorite comedian in the world. She is, of course, a veteran stand-up with 8 specials to her name. Her comedy is quite the experience. She changes voices, sometimes almost like she's been possessed, channeling friends and family members. It's not what you'd expect to see on a stand-up stage, but it's also concrete and relatable. She talks about career anxiety and relationships and mental illness, which she still struggles with today. The brilliance behind Maria's work is in its humanity. What's she been up to these days? Well, after working for 2 seasons as the star and creator of Lady Dynamite on Netflix, Maria has another new special out. It's called Weakness is the Brand. It's out now on pretty much every platform. Let's listen to a little bit from that new special. Doesn't need much setup, as you're about to hear. Maria is making the case for why greatness in all things, is overrated.
Why does everything have to be so good? There's a lot of talk in society about that's amazing. That's genius. He's a pig of productivity. She's a kaleidoscope of can-do. Yes. There are certain people in society who have a tremendous amount of talent. You combine that with an unbelievable work ethic, it is greatness. Is that really that interesting? Haven't we seen it before? Einstein, Beyonce, the Muppets, Japan. Adore a 2-star experience. I do.
Maria, you're Syrian here,
yes.
Living along with your comedy special,
yes.
Like no one since, I think, one of the Pointer Sisters once sang along with herself.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'll sing my own bits along with myself. Yes.
Maria, welcome back to Bullseye. It's very nice to see you.
Thank you so much for having me on the Bullseye. I'm delighted.
You've been doing this thing lately where you recruit people to practice your stand-up on.
Yes, off Twitter.
So most stand-up comics, mm-hmm. when they're working on material,
yes.
they work it over a little bit themselves, mm-hmm. and then they maybe bring it to the stage and see how it flies or see if new stuff occurs to them as they do it, or they refine on stage, especially a headlining stand-up comic lives in L.A. or New York or something. They're building up an act to take on the road by, you know, working it over in clubs.
Yeah.
You decided that the way that you would go through this process was invite one stranger the internet.
That's right.
To meet you at a coffee shop at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And just go through your act with you.
Yes. Yes. And there's no pressure. They don't have to react in any certain way. I've definitely had people not laugh. But that is not unlike a show in Los Angeles. Often there are not many people in the audience. So, yeah, it wasn't too different from a regular show in LA where it's mostly comedians in the audience. And yet, yeah, I could name the time. I could it could be geographically very close to me. And also it was definitely going to be a fan, you know, somebody who follows me on Twitter. Unless, of course, it hasn't happened yet that somebody, you know, decided to punk me and show up and go, "Are you?" Which that's going to be exciting when that happens. But yeah, it was, I'm a Fabergé egg sitting on a velvet pillow. I need to have pleasant experiences. More pleasantries. I know, and some comics totally disagree. You know, you got to get yourself, toughen yourself up, make sure you can do any crowd. You know, you're not a real comic, which is fine. If I'm not a real comic and I don't have to do those gigs, then yay.
Yeah, I feel like there is, you know, a couple of years ago, the stand-up comedian Bill Burr did an interview where he spoke up against the softness of an alternative room where you can just his description of an alternative room, I'm going to be frank, sounded like 1997 to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It involves people reading jokes off of note cards and something like that. I don't know if how facetious he was being, and I don't know how serious he was. But his point seemed to be, and Bill is, in my experience, a nice man and certainly is a brilliant stand-up comic.
Yes.
But his perspective seemed to be, I have been through hell.
Yes. So,
performing for audiences who hate me, you should too.
Which I completely respect that. And I think it is one of my favorite things to watch is Bill Burr being booed by the entire city of Philadelphia.
Oh, that is one of the best videos on YouTube.
It is a delight to watch him counting down the minutes. I've done shows like that, and not as severe. I've gotten teary-eyed on stage once. I think, I don't know if it's a product of getting older and knowing that there's only so much time left, going, I've had a terrible night. I've done it. To the extent that it starts crushing my spirit, I don't know how useful me doing one-nighters in North Dakota is really going to make me a better comedian. Maybe it will. Maybe it would. And if I've lost my edge, or, you know, if I ever had an edge, I think some people could argue that point, that I was never very good YouTube commenters. But, I've had a nice life. I've had a nice life. That's not the machismo. I love machismo, and I love the whole idea of, like, I'm going to kill it. But as a, you know, and I used to do more dealing with hecklers kind of stuff of anger of, guess what? You guys don't think this is a comedy show? Well, it isn't. It's an intervention. We're all here together to tell you how you're at live entertainment events. I'll go first. We're going around the room using I statements. I feel like you should shut the up. Like, even that, like, I just feel like that anger, I just don't want to go there anymore. Like, people come in a MAGA hat to a show they didn't realize they were come seeing because they're like, oh, it's a blonde woman. I'll like it. Nope. You know, and if they say, I'm going to just, you know, talk to them and try to be loving towards them and say, I think you've made a terrible mistake. I know I have, coming to Buffalo for a full weekend. I should have just done a Tuesday, Wednesday and done a door deal. But I did not. Shame on both of us.
What do you get out of rehearsing with a stranger sitting across from you at a table in a cafe?
Human connection. I'm lonely. Oh my God, we live in Los Angeles where you barely see human beings. So I am grateful to meet a smiling, pleasant person. And and I want others to have a good time. Like, there's nothing more miserable. Like, I feel bad when people come to a show and they're pissed off and they've had two drinks and they're drunk and then they're like, oh, I don't like anything this person's saying, and I don't think it's funny. I feel bad. Jeez, that sucks. And then you're squished, and you're kind of lit. Especially clubs kind of light the audience, too, and so you can't leave. And, oh, listen. I'm not going to say they're victims, but...
Maria, I'm glad that someone is finally speaking up on behalf of the misunderstood people who get too drunk and heckle at comedy shows, ruining the experience for everyone else.
Well, oftentimes they're not drunk. Oftentimes they're just pissed. I'm giving them, more of an alcohol problem than they usually have. Usually people are fairly sentient and upright when they say, you suck. All right. Well... Seems like some feelings are coming up. Let's have some curiosity about this, as my therapist says.
Interrogate your hecklers as you would interrogate your feelings?
Yeah. Well, it is fascinating because you never know why someone's upset or even if they are upset. Sometimes somebody's making a noise that sounds aggressive, but in fact, it's an interesting laugh or some form of cerebral palsy. Like, you just, you've got to really see the person. That's a problem, too, is it's dark oftentimes. And so you can't always see exactly what is going on. Is someone having a great time? Confused? Any number of things. I mean, sometimes they don't even know what they're feeling, which is even more exciting. I had one man come up on stage with me. He just walked up on stage. It's like there's bouncers, it's security. No, they didn't stop. The guy gets up, stands up on stage, and then he I think he was really on high. He was on drugs, and I asked him what he needed. He's very tall, and he said he just wanted a hug. So I gave him a hug, and then I let him off stage. But that's what you want to go for a live performance for, is to see, will the comedian get killed? Will is tonight the night? No, it turned out it was fine. But I think I do like the challenge of live performance. But yeah, to the point where I'm gonna feel bad about existing, I'm out.
You have a new show called What's Your Ailment?
Yes, OnTopic.com.
Where OnTopic.com, where you talk to people of note, I would say is the broad category.
Yes.
Interesting people of note about their mental illnesses.
Yes.
What is your current state of health, if
I may
ask?
Very good. Very good. And of course, as my mentals have made me a millionaire, it's a bit of a concern. The idea for the show topic, came up with it, and I thought they thought it would be a helpful thing to discuss mental health with other people, and I thought I would. That sounds fun talk about it. My thing that I was interested in hearing people is, what have they gotten for free for healthcare? What terrible healthcare have they received that was weirdly helpful in the end? For example, I went to a free clinic, and the therapist was so overwhelmed by my problems, like, what are you gonna do? That I was like, I'm gonna be fine. Should I check in on you next week? Like, what? I got plans. So that kind of thing. Like, what have you gotten for free? Because it's less interesting to me, I think, to ask people who are in the entertainment industry, who are usually earning fairly well, or union members, and it's relatively easier to get health care than it is for your average bear. And there's much more acceptance in the workplace, I think. So I try to ask people, have they ever lost a job because of what they think was an illness issue? And because that has happened to me, or not happened, you know, but happened as a result of health issues. And yeah, so I ask questions that I wanted to know the answers to.
What have you figured out in your working life as a stand-up comic, working the road and working in film and television, makes it possible for you to do your work, you know, sustainably for you?
Well, total self-employment. Like, I can say no to whatever I want. Stand-up is 2 hours a night at the most of performance, and then if you go out and sell merch. I don't know if you're a merch guy, Jesse, but I love to sell merch with my friend Jackie Cation. It also feels good to the brain. Bursts of joy from the audience, that feels tremendous. So it can be good. If I'm sure if I were doing other things, drugs and alcohol and that kind of thing, I think then things can become more chaotic. But yeah, it's been a very good job. Very good job.
I know you travel. Speaking of Jackie Cation, comedian Jackie Cation, yeah. You've worked the road a lot with Jackie.
Yes, yes.
Who's a great stand-up comic. And also just you've often toured with a pal.
Yes.
And I think sometimes of a time I was at a conference, and I have a very severe, frequent migraine headaches. And I got a migraine in my, and I was in my hotel room, and I couldn't, I was like literally on the floor of the hotel room and like was trying to come up with a plan to get into the bed. That's where I was at. And I knew I had to eat, because if I didn't eat, I would, my headache would get worse and worse. It was a big trigger for me. And I was there with one of the former producers of this show, Nick, and I texted him and said, "Hey, Nick, can you bring me some food? I'm on the floor of my hotel room." And he said, "Yep, I can," and brought it to me. But that, I think, having had that experience had two effects on me. One was, well, I mean, I was had undying loyalty to my friend and colleague Nick for doing that for me. Because it was so important in that time. But it also, it reminded me of how vulnerable I was if I was on the road by myself. Like, I was like, what would I have done if I, because, you know, I have to travel by myself sometimes. Is that part, is that part of the reason that you often bring somebody with you on the road?
For sure. Like, it it does feel so good. Jackie totally saved me. I think it was 10 years ago now, but and I prior to the current meds that I'm on now, and I was just bombing so terribly at some Erie, Pennsylvania club, and I got off stage and I just burst into tears, and she's like, "Get her some chicken wings. Get her some chicken wings." And and which did genuinely help. And then and then Jackie switched. She was the headliner for the rest of the week, which really used to help a lot in the beginning, because before the internet, people were less likely to know what they were coming to see. So I would have the credits to headline, but then people were confused and frightened when they said, "We are a comedy. Do you know what kind of comedy this is?" "No." But we're coming out. It's great to have a pal and somebody who loves you kind of no matter how the show goes. Is very nice. Very nice.
Let's hear some more comedy from my guest Maria Bamford and her new special, which is called "Weakness Is the Brand." In this clip, she's talking about having been invited to do a commencement speech at her alma mater, which is the University of Minnesota. And she gets some sage life advice.
Okay, class of the, whatever year this is. You'll find it doesn't matter. Okay. You guys, don't move to Los Angeles with the promise of a touring Star Trek show. Hook up on a one-night stand with a Vulcan. He gives you an STD that you let go for so long that when you finally go to the Planned Parenthood in Hollywood, California, the doctor says, "Why did you let this get so bad?" Don't do that! Send in your 1040 IRS forms with "sorry, don't get it, smiley face, exclamation point." You can, but they will bill you. They'll send you an invoice. Yes, yes.
What I love about that story around you giving the commencement speech, and you did, this is a real speech that you really gave.
Yes, I did. Yes. You can see it all on YouTube where I did it so poorly. I make little eye contact. Anyways, I'm not the best speaker.
But there's a couple things that happen over the course of this story. One is comedian Jackie Cation's 83-year-old dad gives you some advice on how to ask for money to give a commencement speech.
Never say no without a number. That means if you're not even sure you want the job, put out something ridiculous, something you've never gotten before in your life. That way, either you get a ton of money or you don't have to do it. Genius.
He's right about that.
Genius.
He's right on target. And then by the time you are ready to collect the money, which they initially resisted paying you anything on the grounds that it is
an honor
to be asked to give a commencement speech. But anyway, you are so racked with guilt about the prospect of collecting this money that you decide to give it away to someone in the audience to pay off their loans.
Pay down their student loans. Well, I had to do two speeches that day, so I gave it away in increments of four checks, $2,500 apiece. I did blank checks, or to Sallie Mae. I did four Sallie Mae student loan checks, so I asked, any two kids, you guys got Salome, and then two kids ran up from the audience. I was like, good hustle. And and the good thing about that, it was a good math lesson, or about negotiating. Had I negotiated for more, I could have given away more, which is...
Somehow you are spinning this story.
Yeah, that I'm a bad person.
Where into you being a bad person. You went on a trip... to a place that is a four-hour, five-hour flight from where you live.
Yeah.
You went, you delivered a public good.
The old
you offered
country.
The wisdom that you had to offer to young people who required wisdom.
Yes.
You then gave away the money that you earned to help those young people. And you are now telling me why you're a bad person for having done this. You do this in the special, too. When you tell this story, you're like, if you're going to do something good, make you start being self-deprecating about it.
Because, I mean, it is true. Like, if I could have a little camera on my head every time I did something good so that people could see, you know, I do, like... One of the first times I did some charitable act I remember was when I was a kid. I saved up $20 and I put it in the communion thing as was passing the communion bowl. And I remember going, is everybody seeing this? Is everybody? Everybody got an eye on this? Nobody cared. And I do have that instinct, which totally takes, from what I've heard from Jewish culture, it takes the blessing out of it if you are not doing something anonymously. To which I say, can't we have any fun?
The conclusion of my interview with Maria Bamford coming up after just a minute. Don't go anywhere. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
You might know Nick Kroll from his very raunchy animated show on Netflix, Big Mouth.
Are you the puberty fairy?
The puberty fairy? I'm the hormone monster. I'm not a fairy.
Well, now he's starring as a romantic lead in a movie set at the Olympics. Actor and comedian Nick Kroll, next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Hi, I am Lori Kilmartin.
And I'm Jackie Cation.
Together, we host a podcast called...
The Jackie and Lori Show.
We're both stand-up comics. We recently met each other because women weren't allowed to work together on the road or in gigs for a long, long time. And so our friendship has been unfolding on this podcast for a couple of years. Jackie constantly works the road. I write for Conan, and then I work the road in between.
We do a lot of stand-up comedy, and so we celebrate stand-up, and
yes.
We also bitch about it.
We keep it to an hour. We don't have any guests. We somehow find enough to talk about every single week. So find us. You can subscribe to The Jackie and Lori Show at Maximum Fun. .org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, bye.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is Maria Bamford. She is a brilliant stand-up comic and actor. She has a new special out called Weakness is the Brand. You can rent or buy it online pretty much anywhere. She is also the host of a new talk show. On What's Your Ailment, Maria talks somewhat seriously about mental illness with folks in comedy like Rachel Bloom, Baron Vaughn, and Tom Arnold. It's streaming now on Topic. Let's get back to our conversation. You've been married for a few years now.
Yes.
To your wonderful husband, Scott.
Yes.
He comes up in the special a lot.
Yes.
How has being married after many years of very fitful romantic life,
yes.
How has it changed your life?
It's been spectacular. I can only, I definitely didn't have the willingness to go through any discomfort of intimacy before, even so much as far as friendships and my family. I mean, I moved away from my family for 2,000 miles, so I don't have to have those kind of intense interactions with anybody on a regular basis, and stand-up is certainly a controlled way of connecting with people. So, it's been wonderful. And neither of us were very good at it. He also had not had any long-term relationships or ever been married before. And so we were both like, come on, let's do this. We went to the Gottmans. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Gottmans. They have a theory, they call it the Love Lab, where they've done scientific studies of couples for over 30 years doing blood pressure monitoring and other things over the course of a 72-hour weekend to see what are the things that cause people to divorce. And so we went to go see, went to one of their conferences, and the four signs of the apocalypse in a relationship are criticism. Let's say I go, oh, I have a sailboat. Criticism, that's a stupid sailboat. Contempt, you and your sailboats. Defensiveness, what sailboat? And stonewalling. And that's when you say absolutely nothing. That's the silent treatment, which I have a friend who does that. That's her way of expressing anger is a silent treatment. Just to have more willingness to try to understand someone else's point of view and to see my own foibles. Anyways, it's been delightful, and to let myself be loved by somebody, I think is new, and to take the risk, you know, because I mean, even though you love somebody, there is always that sense of like, well, what if you do wake up? You know, because people are always saying in those like magazines, like, I never knew. And like, I guess that can happen to anybody. But I was like, well, if I find out something later, I'll just be like, God, that's amazing. He kept that from me for decades. There were bodies in the backyard. He was, but I mean, I don't think that of my husband, but I just, you know, just to, I think it's good to risk in life. I'm grateful that we have been together. It's been wonderful. And that's also part of the reason I don't want to do shows at night is because we're at home snuggling. I got to snuggle.
Bring him out to the show.
Oh, God.
Have him snuggle you while you do your shtick.
And he does do stand-up. He does it in support of – he started doing it about 3 years in because he had fear of public speaking. And I'm just like, oh, my God, do stand-up. Nobody's paying attention. And so he's done it. He's really funny. He's really good. And he's let me use a lot of his bits, which is very kind. But he's a painter. Scott Marvel Cassidy. ScottMarvelCassidy.com.
One of the things that you describe in, I guess it was in an episode of What's Your Ailment, is that your thoughts have slowed a little.
Yes, for sure.
And you're such a careful writer. I mean, I think of all the stand-ups that I know, which are, you know, many, I think you are the most careful and maybe one of the best writers of any stand-up. And like your diction is always very specific.
Yes. Oh, I love words. I love them so much. And so I want to use what I think are the right words. Sometimes I don't always look it up. And then I use a word that's like the word that I mean to use. But wait, what was the question?
The question was, how does your mind being a little slower affect your process of making stand-up? Because you're a comic who, you really write your jokes. And, like, you write them in paragraph form.
I'll write beats. I write beats out, and then sometimes I'll write it out to remember it or to try to get exactly what I'm trying to say with a joke. Sometimes you get away from like, oh, what? Why was this interesting to me in the first place? It's slower. I think I said on the show that sometimes I've taken less meds so that I can kind of speed things up a little bit and get some, which is not so great. That is not the greatest. I don't think I haven't done that in a few years, and I'm, now it's just a slower process. I still have new bits. I have one I'm excited about. about children's books and Richard Scarry, Busy Town. Have you ever read Richard Scarry?
Sure.
Busy Town? Of course you have. It's if you don't know it, it's anthropomorphized animals, and then they have little jobs in a big scene. So if you don't know how to read, you know, it says baker next to the cat, and the cat's wearing an apron and a puffy hat.
Cat bakes donuts, by the way. And I'm just like, come on, let's fry donuts.
Well,
let's fry our donuts.
You know he's a baker because it's steaming. You know, whatever he has steaming is so beautiful. And the great thing I love about those things, you know, they have a taxi driver who's an alligator and the cop is chasing him, but he's a mouse. The mouse is a... there's no backstory. You know, you don't have to hear all the details behind it. Like, well, the cat inherited the business, actually, and he's not, there's not as much passion there. The recipes are the same, but everything tastes different. Because I would like to think in that scene, I would be a bear, and it would say comedian right next to me in, you know, schoolhouse type face, and you would know that I was the comedian because I would have a big bow tie and a flower that squirts. And nobody goes, oh, is she any good? No. Of course. It's the town comedian. She makes the whole town laugh. So, yeah, I'm still coming up with ideas, but I think it's slower.
Let's hear some more comedy from my guest, Maria Bamford, and her new special, Weakness is the Brand, which is on almost all platforms.
Oh, God, yes.
Almost all platforms. In this clip, Maria is portraying two very near and dear to her persons who've come up in this conversation already. Her soft-spoken and very Christian mother and her sweet and somewhat timid husband, Scott. And her mom is trying to talk Scott and Maria through some issues. The first voice you'll hear is the mom.
Now, Scott, do you have any concerns?
Yeah.
Maria, I love you. I love that you put a bench on the front lawn, but now there is a man living there. Which is fine, we live in Los Angeles, but now when you leave your keys in the front door overnight, over and over and over again, I feel terrified. It's just that's where they fit. Maybe I could ask the guy on the bench to remind me. Honey, no, okay. Shut it down.
Yeah, I know that you really did put a bench in front of your house.
Yes, yes, and it brought all sorts of wonderful... I read in a study from the Netherlands that if you provide a place to sit, it builds community. So, provided it, and it did. People came to see babies, and young lovers would have a smoke and a snog on the bench. And then also a man lived there for a certain amount of time. There was some light prostitution happening between it and a white van parked outside our house. So all sorts of things came to the bench. And now we live in a different neighborhood, and we have just put out a new bench. So very exciting to see what's going to come.
Congratulations, not just to you, but to the people of Altadena, California.
Come have a seat.
You have done a lot of material about your parents over the years.
Yes.
You also did an entire stand-up special where the audience was just your parents.
Yes, yes.
Are your parents proud of your career?
Well, interesting you should ask that, because I got a write-up for this special in the New York Times and in the New Yorker. And so I kind of waited for my mom, you know, Mom, are you going to call me? You know, and she did, and she told me everything that she ate that day. And there was this... We went out to this Cuban place, and it's just wonderful fish. I could live on beans and rice. I really could. I could live on beans and rice, beans and rice. And I had to prompt her, Mom, I was just in the New York Times. And is that? Oh, honey, I know. I saw that. That's so great. I had to prompt her, Mom, can you please say, I'm proud of you? Oh, I didn't think you'd need that. All right. Honey, I am very proud of you. I am very, very proud of you. And now, every time she calls me the past few times, she says, I am proud of you. I'm proud of you. Which I don't know. I mean, I think it's just as meaningful, even if I've given her a script and a line reading. It felt sincere. They're extremely supportive. They have me on Google Alert. How much more supportive can you be?
Are you proud of your career, Maria?
Yes, I'm very proud. Oh my God, I'm done. Is this it? I'm very proud of myself. Because it is. I mean, it is about hanging in there, and also I also want to acknowledge that I've been extraordinarily privileged. I've given a full ride scholarship through life for the age of 24 by my parents, and though I've had some setbacks, for the most part, it's been gravy. So I'm proud of myself because you still gotta show up. That's one thing everybody has some power to do is to show up in whatever way you can. So I have done that for the most part. If I can't show up, I can Skype. Skype in if you can.
Maria, I'm always glad to see you. I loved your new special and I loved your show.
Thank
you for coming and doing this with me.
Oh, thank you so much. I am so grateful to be on the show. It's a wonderful show.
Maria Bamford, best in the business. Her new stand-up special, Weakness is the Brand, is fantastic. You can rent or buy it pretty much everywhere. Her show, What's Your Ailment, is available to watch now on the streaming network Topic. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye produced at MaximumFun.org World Headquarters, overlooking MacArthur Park in beautiful Los Angeles, California, where, this week, our colleague Chewy brought avocados from his dad's avocado orchard in Temecula. So, thanks for the avocados, Jesus, and Dad Ambrosio. The show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our producer is Kevin Ferguson. Jesus Ambrosio is our associate producer and brings the avocados. We get help from Casey O'Brien. Our production fellow is Jordan Cowling. Our interstitial music is by Dan Wally, also known as DJW. You can find a collection of music that he has made for Bullseye on Bandcamp, and it is Pay What You Will. Just search there for DJW Bullseye. Our theme song is by The Go Team. Thanks to them and their label Memphis Industries for letting us use it. And we have decades of interviews in our archives at MaximumFun.org or in your favorite podcast app. You can also find them on YouTube. There are a bunch, years worth, with Maria Bamford, who I have long felt is America's greatest stand-up comic. So make sure to find those. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Search for Bullseye with Jesse Thorne there. And I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.